Good evening. This is Mae Bressel. It's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. It's broadcast number 673, October the 29th, 1984. I'm going to put off the Raymond Donovan Part 3 because I want to discuss our candidate, Ronald Reagan, who will become the next president of the United States in a very short time. And ties into the Donovan story, as you will see within a few weeks. But there was an article in the newspaper this week sharing that document of the letter of Ronald Reagan to Richard Nixon, candidate in 1960, that he should compare John Kennedy to either Karl Marx or Adolf Hitler, that triggered my thoughts about Ronald Reagan, who the real Ronald Reagan is. We've talked about it many times, but a little different approach in more detail this time. Just to update quickly what I was talking about last year, I like to do that because the year goes so fast. In the congressional records, and I wish you'd look this up and copy it, September 15th, 1983, Representative Henry Gonzalez was challenging Henry Kissinger. Who is he? He claimed that he has a State Department of his own. That is he a hired gun? Does he literally rent out the State Department? What are his goals? He is running a show that he makes appear bipartisan so that we don't have any debate, that we haven't had 10 debate on foreign policy for 10 years since the Vietnam experiences, and that he takes control of every situation for his own good. The people hire him who have stakes in status quo, who don't care about poverty or hunger or democratic process, which is the important part, that there's no dialogue of any kind on what is happening in this country, and he fingered Henry Kissinger. Well, Kissinger is a puppet along with Alexander Haig, and that, again, ties into my Reagan story and the succession of the presidency, the way it works. Fritz Kramer is the overlord representing what I believe is the Fourth Reich of Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig, and these men are terribly important to the succession of power. The congressional record is available, and I have it on the other tape in case you want more of it. There's a current lawsuit going on of William Westmoreland against CBS, and there was an article in Spotlight, June 11, 1984, that when CBS made the movie, the only person they permitted to defend Westmoreland was Lieutenant General Daniel Graham, who was former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, who had the honor of defending General Westmoreland on that particular program. Also, the role of Mr. Fritz Kramer, who is a partner of Daniel Graham. They share their offices in Washington, D.C., or at least one of them is a dummy front forever, whatever they're doing. Fritz Kramer was the man that helped Westmoreland self-destruct himself, which is an interesting thought described in a book somebody sent me. A quotation from this book, it's called Defeated, Inside America's Military Machine by Stuart Lurie, L-O-O-R-Y, Random House, 1973. And this book credits Fritz Kramer as being a person behind the fragmentation of the U.S. in the war in Vietnam. Now, why would they want to fragment the war or lose the war, such a war as that, when they've made such an all-out effort? For one reason, it's a test case for how to handle the big war being the one against the Soviet Union. John Judge, who writes and does radio work back east, many of you know his work. His mother used to work in the Pentagon, and she was one of the people that helped estimate how long a war, and specifically it was a Southeast Asian war, how long it would take. And they give like a 10-year time period, and in that framework, you know how many people are going to die, how much money will be spent, what you'll have accomplished, and then you get out. So that the Vietnamese War, the South Korean War, the Middle East confrontation, and so forth, are warm-ups of weapons, of how to control the media. Just as when Ronald Reagan took Grenada, he said that we couldn't have the media, such as in Vietnam, it hindered the body count. We don't want body count anymore, and the media are in the way. So based upon our experiences, and they keep going back and citing certain examples, whether it's chemical weapons or so forth in Vietnam, that new brochure that came out about instructing in El Salvador how to kill political leaders, how to create martyrs, how to use the known criminals to kill. That came from Vietnam and South Korea. It's been a handbook from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, which is the base of the Nazi criminals that were brought here to this country to form just exactly what they do, which are death squads and private armies that can take away the policy of the major army if the army doesn't want to go along with it. Then we have armed our miniature armies that are deadly and serious, and no longer does Congress have to be consulted. For example, Congress turns down Nicaragua, the money to fight Nicaragua, then they give it to the private army, the soldiers of fortune, and the mercenaries funded by the CIA and the church organizations, Reverend Moon and Pat Robertson and all the others, to make their own policy so that the private mercenaries and the ministry are funded by the intelligence community to do it anyway when Congress says you can't. Now, the thing I wanted to talk about regarding Ronald Reagan and how he got to power and the future heir to his power has to do with that letter, as I say, that he wrote in his hand to Richard Nixon in 1960. Nixon was nominated to run against John Kennedy, and Nixon was the selected heir of the Nazis, the same people that put Henry Kissinger in his uniform, that put him with the top Nazis after the war, that put Fritz Kramer in as plans officer of the Pentagon. Those same people had been working with Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan all along, and at the time that Nixon is to run against John Kennedy, he has the effrontery on July 15th, 1960, to send a letter suggesting, shouldn't someone tag Mr. Kennedy's new bold, imaginative program with its proper age under the tousled boyish haircut, there's still old Karl Marx. Well, Nixon used that one with Jerry Voorhees when he ran for the House seat. He used it against Helen Douglas when he ran for the Senate. But Ronald Reagan is coaching him, use that one. Well, hardly Karl Marx, John Kennedy's father, Joe Kennedy, was a Knight of Malta from the Vatican. He was the British ambassador, American ambassador to Great Britain, brought home because he was so pro-Hitler, pro-Nazi, that even J. Edgar Hoover brought him home so that it wouldn't call attention to our policies in the 40s, early 40s, of Joe Kennedy, working with the organized crime syndicate in Chicago and bootlegging whiskey, hardly, well, Karl Marx stuff, making a fortune of millions of dollars. So why are they comparing him to Hitler? Richard Nixon, 10 years earlier, brought Nikolai Malacca of the Iron Guard to his Whittier office as a dummy front, that Western tube, and he worked with Mr. Trifia, who another acknowledged war criminal from the Iron Guard from Romania, and Otto von Bullschwing. Nixon had been working a long time with the Nazis already for how many years? This was in 1960, certainly since 1945. So what was he talking about? One, he should be Karl Marx, and the other, he should be Hitler. Reagan was writing that kind of garbage, but somebody had to be prompting him. He wasn't that smart. Why should he be tipping off the future president of the United States to use this kind of material and sign his name, you know, Ronnie, he puts it in there. But that's the head of Ronald Reagan in 1960. I chronicled the 1960s in that article I did for Rebel Magazine last November, almost a year ago. The group, the Christian Right in 1960, that plotted the murder of Kennedy before he was going to even be elected. They wouldn't have to bother with the election. How the Christian Defense League, set up by Reverend William Gale, and he worked with Captain Robert Brown, who now runs the Soldier of Fortune magazine, who was a professional from Fort Benning, Georgia, where these death murder manuals come out of. The Christian Defense League had a man who had been trained in the Army as a colonel in the Philippines, and his superior officer was Mr. Charles Willoughby. Now, in 1960, when Young American for Freedom was formed, Willoughby, Charles Willoughby, and Ronald Reagan are on the board with Robert Morris, and I go into that too, the network of people that had trained in the Philippines under the Douglas MacArthur, and MacArthur, and also Willoughby was a knight, knighted by the Vatican, who worked with Mussolini, was proud of it, who was violently pro-fascist, whose real name was Carl Weidenbach, who worked with MacArthur in Southeast Asia and was the link to the Christian Right that later links up with Ronald Reagan. Now, interestingly enough, in the book on Ronald Reagan that Don Freed just wrote, he tells about Dr. Loyal Davis, Nancy Reagan's stepfather, when she was Nancy Davis, Before she went to Hollywood and married Ronald in 1952, her father was in the Philippines with Charles Willoughby, violent anti-communist, and he's down there in the Philippines with Douglas MacArthur, and he comes home, and his brat daughter is sent to Hollywood to act, quotes, act, and gets Ronald Reagan in 52. 8 years later, he's to write this article to Nixon, but Nancy had latched on to Ronald Reagan at that time period, and her daddy, in addition to the Christian Defense League, was a cohort of Willoughby, and again, Willoughby in 1960 will be with Reagan and Robert Morris, and a group that are to bring in a team that worked with the assassination of John Kennedy from Munich, Germany. So Nancy Davis, her father, was down there in the Philippines also with Mr. Willoughby, the known fascist, and I've done many broadcasts and written about Willoughby. So these links to the Philippines and to Willoughby include the Christian Right, the Christian Defense League, and this great anti-communist in Chicago who coincidentally later her daughter is to latch on to Ronnie and marry him. I don't think any of this was coincidental. I don't believe it for a minute. Now, before we get on to Ronnie and his actions in Hollywood, because preceding the time where he met Nancy, he had a very interesting career that paralleled that of Errol Flynn, who was active agent of the Gestapo, co-starring with Reagan. But because Reagan will be elected, I have to say to you, or paraphrase some words of the author, George Steiner, who gives Hitler a speech in his play, The Portage to San Cristobal, which explains all of us and why Ronald Reagan is possible at this time, what makes him possible. Incidentally, George Steiner, who speaks for Hitler in the play, has an interesting background. Born in Paris in 1929, parents were from Vienna, came to America in 1944, studied at University of Chicago, and at Harvard, Oxford, a Rhodes Scholar, and then at the Institute for Advanced Study at Princeton, New Jersey. He touched the bases of Mr. Kissinger and Alan Dulles and a whole bunch of them, and went on to England to be an intellectual and teaches at the University of Geneva. Just a few lines from the closing of that play when Hitler is speaking, and it has to do with all of us and with the way Reagan became the president, how it's possible that he becomes president. This is Steiner speaking for Hitler, A.H. giving the speech. When I turned on the Jew, no one came to his rescue. Not one. France, England, Russia, or even Jew-ridden America did nothing. They were glad the exterminator had come. They did not say so openly, but they secretly rejoiced. We had to find and burn out that virus of utopia before the whole Western civilization got sick. To return to man as he is, selfish, greedy, short-sighted, that is the way he is. He's warm and housed, marvelously housed in his own stench. We were chosen to be the conscience of man, said a Jew. And I answered him and I said, gentlemen, you are not man's conscience, you are his bad conscience, telling us that we are so perfect that there's a perfect world. He said, there isn't such a perfect world. You exaggerated grossly and hysterically and made me a mad devil, the quiescence of a devil hell embodied, when I was in truth only a man of my time. Oh, inspired, I grant you, with a certain, how shall I put it, a nose for supreme political possibility, a master of human moods, but a man of my time. Average, if you will, it couldn't have been otherwise. Or how could millions of ordinary men and women have found in me the mirror, the plain mirror, of their needs and appetites? That's Ronald Reagan, the poor man, the father that's alcoholic, the father the Catholic, the mother the devout Christian, telling him we're born evil, there is no utopia, and life is hell, and you defend the church and send him to the Christian fundamentalist college. And Adolf Hitler, the poor boy who is brought up, who's one of the masses, who always says he hates Wall Street in his speeches and takes money under the table. And, of course, Reagan takes it over the table. It was, I allow you, an ugly time, says Hitler through Steiner, but I did not create its ugliness, and I was not its worst. Far from it. How many wretched men of the forest did your Belgian friends murder or leave to starvation and syphilis when they raped the Congo? Answer me this, gentlemen. Or do I have to remind you it was 20 million? And that picnic was underway when I was a newborn. And what about Rotterdam and Coventry compared to Dresden and Hiroshima? And he goes on, I did not come out worse in the black game of numbers. Ask the Boers in South Africa, the British in South Africa. What about Stalin, who slaughtered 30 million, he brings up. And he says, I wasn't the worst. And how many Jews did Stalin kill? And none of you talk about that. Then he says, and this is applicable to Israel and Zionism and America after the war. He says, how could Zionism spring up if it wasn't in the shape of the new German nation? He says, if we weren't so mean, if we didn't have a Holocaust, he really says, if we didn't kick ass, would it have possible for you to learn the limits of what you can do, and then you took it from there? That's paraphrasing it. He says it was the Holocaust that gave you the courage of injustice, that made you drive the Arab from his home and from his field and live with lice eaten and without resources. You endured knowing that those that you drove out were rotting in refugee camps, not 10 miles away, buried alive in despair with lunatic dreams of vengeance. The Holocaust was the necessary mystery before Israel could come into its strength. And ending that quote, the Holocaust was the necessary mystery before the United States government could bring in Reinhard Gehlen and Alan Dulles could make deals with the top Nazis to build space stations and satellite stations to scorch the entire Earth and bring it out. It was us, the common people, that put him in. It is the common people that put and approve of Reagan. And while people burn and die, Central America close to us, we let the funds keep rolling on, the weapons go on, the napalm in El Salvador, the beheading of people, the cutting off of their genitals, the terrible quartering of people alive, burning them alive. I've put it on the air, read the text. Nobody disputes the facts, but nobody wakes up. So they learned the lesson of what we are. What we are is what we admired in Hitler. He had the nerve to do it. He had the nerve to show how mean you are. And Ronald Reagan has the nerve to show you how mean he is, and he is us. And that's what the play was about. And that's why the elections will go the way they're going to go. And Ronald Reagan will be president of the United States. If I'm wrong, the people aren't that mean and rotten, then I'll have to say, oh, next week and more plus one day, that people are nice and that Ronald was defeated. But the fact that he won't be defeated is the fact of what Steiner is saying through Hitler, that he is what people really are, and that's why they like him so much. Now to a few facts and chronologies of Ronald Reagan with Errol Flynn, because their lives were very, very close in the studio in Hollywood, the same friends in common. And you can't separate the man from what he was doing or who he was doing it with, and how Reagan's career escalated at the time it did. This is very important. In 1930, Ronald Reagan was going to a Christian college in Illinois that had 230 students. In 1932, Errol Flynn met Dr. Urban, who was very pro-German at the time when Hitler was rearming. In 1932, Flynn met Urban in 1930. In 1932, Reagan graduated from his Christian college and went to a radio station in Des Moines, Iowa. And in 1933, that 1 year later, when Hitler was in power, Errol Flynn was already the ardent supporter of Adolf Hitler. In 1935 to 1937, Reagan made trips in the summer to Catalina Island. He was doing reporting for the Cubs and for the baseball games, and he said he wanted to know the players better so he could describe them. But I'm sure that the 35 to 37 years are terribly important of who he saw, what yachts came into the island, and what Reagan was doing in the summer at that time. The station he was broadcasting on combined in Des Moines, Iowa, with another station that was the affiliate of NBC, owned by General Sarnoff and RCA, which is another story of fascism. So that time period from 35 to 37, before he was picked up at Warner Brothers, through one introduction, he walked in the door and one test and made his own terms. He was in Hollywood in the summer. Not many books have had those years filled in. Now, in the time period from 1937 to 1940, when just before he's to co-star with Errol Flynn in the movie Santa Fe Trail, Flynn not only was a strong supporter of Adolf Hitler, but he was helping his friend Dr. Urban escape. They knew he was a Gestapo member, the FBI knew, and the police forces that has whatever they be in the United States, they wanted to kick him out of this country. He'd been at the Spanish Civil War with Errol Flynn, spying on the Loyalists and getting the names of families whose sons were fighting in Spain, fighting against Franco. The purpose of Dr. Urban was to get the names of the families at home for Adolf Hitler, to let him know who, I suppose, could be killed or wiped out or hurt or lose their jobs in some way. If their member of their family was fighting in Spain, Errol Flynn was with Dr. Urban spying on the Loyalists to send the message back to Hitler. And in this time period, as I say, in 1940, they're to make their first movie together. In this time period, Errol Flynn went to the Bahamas. He saw the Duke and Duchess of Windsor in August of 37. Then he went to Germany and was with Adolf Hitler. Then he took Rudolf Hess and Martin Bormann, along with the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, who were then with Hitler, back from Berlin to Paris. Martin Bormann, Adolf Hitler, Rudolf Hess, the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, were friends. This 1941 is when Rudolf Hess is to fly out of Germany to England to the estate of a British person who was pro-Nazi. He landed within 10 miles of his estate and wanted to get the Nazis to help him fight Russia, help Hitler fight Russia. Rudolf Hess and Bormann and the Duke and Duchess of Windsor and Hitler together in 1937 period. In 1938 and 9, I'll go in details of what Errol Flynn was doing just before the movie with Ronald Reagan. And he was with Mr. Werner Gren, who was the wealthiest man in the world at the time from Electrolux, who supplied weapons for Adolf Hitler. Sweden was neutral, so he sent them from Norway to Adolf Hitler. He had a yacht that he had down in the Bahamas that became a good part of the American history of mafia and shenanigans later that tie into Watergate. We won't digress too far. But in the Bahamas was Axel Werner Gren with his yacht that he bought from Howard Hughes, this luxury lot. You would think of Hughes the recluse. Well, Hughes was in touch with Axel Werner Gren and all these other people at this time period. And 1937 to 1940 is the hub of the activity of Errol Flynn and Dr. Urban. And Flynn comes back to Hollywood and makes the movie Santa Fe Trail with Ronald Reagan in 1940. In September 39, Hitler invaded Poland. September 3rd, Great Britain went to war against Germany, and if Errol Flynn were in England, he would have been tried for treason for what he was doing with the Gestapo and with the top Wehrmacht officers working with the top Hitler agents in Mexico and around the world at various places and helping Dr. Urban. In the interim of 1940 to 1942, Ronald Reagan made the movie King's Row, and that gave him a stature in Hollywood he didn't have before, where later he could be picked up by General Electric, and I've done broadcasts on their merge at the top with people from IG Farben. He made a movie in 1941. His stature was up, and in 1942, he made another movie with Errol Flynn called Desperate Journey in 1942. In 1950, as I say, is when Nikolai Meloxa is to come into Richard Nixon's offices in Whittier. This is 8 years later. But they were co-starring in 1942. By 1951, Ronald Reagan was saying, I abhor communism and communist philosophy, and I'll do more on the career of Ronald Reagan. And in 1952, Reagan was running Democrats for Nixon. As early as 1952, he was for Nixon. There's three new books out about that pertain to Nixon, the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, Howard Hughes, and Rudolf Hess. They won't have all the answers, but they're coming out just in a few months, or one may be out now, and they will put in some more pieces of this puzzle of the Windsors, of Hess, of Nixon. One of those books, I mentioned them briefly before, two of them, not the three. One is The American Pope, The Life and Times of Francis Cardinal Spellman by John Cooney. That has to do with Spellman wanting Richard Nixon to be president and working. And again, Reagan was very political and had those inroads since 1952. He married Nancy and dating her before. The other is The Windsor Secret by Peter Allen on the role of the Duke and Duchess of Windsor with Rudolf Hess. Stories that were never told. The journey of the Duke of Windsor to Nazi Germany in 1937. That's when Errol Flynn was there with them at that time. And then it goes into what happened in 1940 and 41, turning points of the war. And in 1940 is when Flynn and Reagan are thick. And then the other book is a new book on Watergate by Michael Drosnin called Citizen Hughes. And this is about Hughes again, who sold his yacht to Axel Wenner-Gren and his wanting Richard Nixon. And of course, the Hughes organization was very much tied in with the Nazi organization through Carl Boyer. And I described that a year ago in my Realist article also. So that their careers overlap in many ways, and I'll detail some of those for you as we go on with this saga. Now, at one time, Richard Nixon was closely tied in with Jack Ruby. In 1946, this little era, these guys are pushing for Richard Nixon to be president. In 1946, before the House Un-American Activity, Richard Nixon was using Jack Ruby as a witness for him, as somebody to testify for him, and there was evidence that came out during the House Select hearings on assassinations. It was brought up by Mr. Trowbridge Ford, a political scientist, a member of the U.S. Army counterintelligence, and it was the links of Richard Nixon to Jack Ruby. Now, later, the organized crime syndicate would come in with Sam Giancana and John Rosselli and Carlos Marcello in the Kennedy assassination, and Ronald Reagan was close to John Rosselli. All of these names overlap. Reagan, Nixon, and the connections of the Hollywood crowd, the people behind the careers of Nixon and Reagan, overlap with the Mafia, the Nazi, and the Vatican, with Spellman and the Pope and the Vatican connections, and then the Nazi connections, very active in Hollywood. I don't think many people realize how active they were. Now, in the 1950s, E. Howard Hunt was working in the CIA as a liaison to Richard Nixon, advising him on matters of John Kennedy and what John Kennedy was going to do. And he was a CIA officer in South America, E. Howard Hunt was. And later he will tie in to the Young Americans for Freedom that William Buckley set up, and again with Willoughby and Reagan on the board and a lot of the Hollywood heavies on the board of Young Americans for Freedom. Mr. John Rousselet from the John Birch Society, and Mrs. Eli Lilly, as I say, Robert Morris, Mrs. Taylor Caldwell, she's on the Western Goals, Los Angeles Police Department, links to the computers in Washington. When Ronald Reagan was asked to be on the board, one of the founders of Young Americans for Freedom in 1960, with people like Charles Willoughby and Professor Hans Senholz, from Western Goals, you know, his reputation and links to John Singlaub and the World Anti-Communist League and William Buckley and George Murphy and Robert Morris. He was selected by the really heavy fascists, the people that were setting up the hot war, the cold war, whatever you want. A lot of links to that biblical Christian right, all of them, either the Vatican or the far, far right wing that is appearing now. Reagan's work, his career, had a lot to do with a preparation and the time period that he was co-starring, as I say, with Errol Flynn, I think is very, very important, considering how active Errol Flynn was. Now, at this time period, the world was run in the 30s and 40s and up till 1945 by Mussolini and Franco and Hirohito and Adolf Hitler. And the bankers from England and America, the Swiss banks, major banks in the world, were funding Adolf and used John McCloy. If you read the book Trading with the Enemy by Charles Higham, who also wrote the one on Errol Flynn and the Nazis, they didn't put this country, this massive, huge country with its resources, its wealth, its breadth, in the hands of an actor. They didn't just choose a man who made a couple of good movies and you have his sympathy because his legs have been cut off, or General Electric Theater. That wasn't why he was in politics, and everything he's done since that day is consistent with what they wanted him to do. In the book The Secret Life of Ronald Reagan that Don Freit wrote It's page 10 where it says that Dr. Loyal Davis, who was battling socialized medicine of any kind, was in the Far East during the war. He was a friend of General Douglas MacArthur and his chief of intelligence, Charles Willoughby, and those stalwarts alerted him to the loss of China to the Reds, and now back in Chicago, he was an activist in the anti-communist cause. And so when Nancy goes out to Hollywood, Daddy has spent time with Mr. Willoughby, and goodness knows if they met after that or how often. And also in the book on page 12 are the quotations of Ronald Reagan being very close to John Rosselli, that he was a notorious gangster and they intended to terrorize the strike leaders in Hollywood if there were strikes. Reagan met Rosselli often and the studio lawyers, and they were such good friends for years after that they would meet at the Friars Club, John Rosselli. After John Rosselli testified to the House Select Committee on his role and participation, or hinted, if not directly, in the murder of John Kennedy, he was found dead, cut up, and put in a drum, meant not to surface, I suppose, hands and legs cut off, outside of Miami. That was at the time the committee was doing their investigation. We'll take a one-minute break and then go on with Errol Flynn and Ronald Reagan for the second half of this broadcast.